Clean contact.
I hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Well, here it comes.
Hello and welcome to
the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and back with me from summer vacation is Jansen Mizorek.
Hello, Andy. It's good to be back.
It's great to see you. What have you been up to with your life? It's been a really long time since we've talked. I don't get to see you in the summer. I haven't done a podcast in 3 months.
Yeah. It's always a pleasure to see the canal crew whenever I get the chance during the summer, because we're so divided with running things up north, and then you guys holding it down down a canal on the south. So it's been nice to finish up the summer and be reunited again, which has been good.
Yeah, so we're just going to turn on the microphone, and we all, you know, it seems like every couple of months we just talk about memorable golf rounds. Mm-hmm. I remember, what was your student's name? Amelia, she said she actually listens to these podcasts. So I thought no one would ever want to hear two people talk about rounds of golf that they played, but apparently one person does.
Sure, shout out Amelia.
I'm sure Mark listens as well. I forget his last name every time, but he knows who he is. I actually played golf with Mark this summer.
Did
so
you?
That'll be in my maybe in one of my stories.
No
so
kidding.
I've got a list of all the rounds of golf that I remember, and maybe you have some list as well.
For sure.
And so, well, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I'll give you a little recap of the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right. So once COVID hit, everything was obviously totally different. And spending a lot of time on the golf course with students was something that turned into being one of our kind of business models, I guess you could say, and talking a little bit more course strategy. Going on the golf course, doing playing lessons, and then just playing a little bit more golf was pretty awesome. Up at Deerfield, they converted the driving range into a short par 3 course, which was cool to be able to go navigate around that, especially in the evenings when nobody was out there. You can almost kind of create your own golf course, little par 3 golf course on that driving range out there. So that was pretty fun to kind of get that transition outside from the winter into the spring and into the summer, making that transfer. And then before we knew it, summer was here, and we had a little bit more flexibility of what we could do. And so we ran our regular scheduled programming. So we did up at Deerfield Golf Club, we did summer intensives, which is kind of our middle school, high school prep program. And we went out and played 9 holes every single day, but this was the most unconventional 9 holes that you would probably ever play. We'd go out and do all sorts of different tasks and have different themes every week of what we were focusing on, what we would do on every hole, change up the groups almost every day, and we had a blast. So I ran that for about 6 weeks, and then I passed that torch over to Coach Andrew, and he took it over for the last 4, and then I made the transition to my favorite program of the summer, and that is high school boot camp. So we did that at Sunset Valley and played nice, same kind of structure, played 9 holes there and got everybody ready for tryouts, high school tryouts, which we kind of got word. We started running that program not knowing if high school tryouts were even going to happen because of the virus and a lot of other sports being canceled. So it was nice once we got the word that that was going to happen, that everybody really kicked it into gear, and you can see that intensity in the program of everybody making those final preparations, which was really fun to be a part of. So that's super brief.
Just a great recap.
Super brief recap there, but yeah, a lot of programming, a lot of walking 9 holes. I mean, I dream of the front 9 at Sunset and Deerfield in my dreams, because I've seen those holes so many times, but I couldn't tell you what the back 9s look like.
What do you hit on hole 1?
Which one?
Sunset.
I hit driver on both. Driver at Sunset and driver at...
You ever hit in the water?
Ever. A couple times.
Oh, all right. Just wondering.
Yeah. It's worth it. It's worth it. No factor. No. If you hit driver, you don't have the water in play on your second shot.
I guess it depends how bad of a shot you hit.
This is true. I mean, if you like smother hook it, then sure. But I think driver takes the water out of play in your second shot from a big picture standpoint. If you lay short of the water, you got to go over it, and you have a longer second. So, you know, I won't get too into it, but driver at the cart path. That's what I do every time. Driver at the cart path.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Never go wrong.
Never go wrong.
All right. Do you want to get into the rounds?
Sure. Yeah. What's your list? How many rounds did you get out? I felt like I started out pretty strong playing in the summer, and then I just played like a couple nine holes here, or I'd play with the students a little bit, but it wasn't like I was going out and playing for myself, you know?
I mean, these are just rounds that I remember. Like,
right, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I've got like 8 or 9.
Cool. Let's hear it.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, yeah. Come on.
First, on my birthday weekend, I went to Sand Valley with Jenny.
A gym.
Yeah, whatever. We played Mammoth Dunes the first round. Good course. First time we played it, we went last year. We took caddies. Didn't really like get along with my caddy that well.
Oh, yeah. I got a caddy story.
He started when he grabbed my bag and he saw that I had 8 clubs in it. He just started like making fun of me with the other caddy, like not really the vibe that I'm going for. Like I want this guy to be like encouraging me and
yeah, or ask a
tell me what to
ask
do,
a question about
yeah.
it or something.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't normally take caddies, so maybe I'm not the best at. Maybe I had to be more bossy about what I wanted from a caddy. But I played okay that day, not the best. Like the first time I started with the caddy, the first time, the second time
sure.
with no caddy, this is like the lowest scoring round of my life. Shot 5 under
get out.
Par, which I don't normally do. But also Mammoth is like it's a forgiving course. I don't know how else to say it.
But listen, I mean, it's a legit golf course, and you got to make the putts. You got to make the birdies.
Still got to get it in the hole.
Nice.
But anyway, so I felt this time with no caddy. I had no caddy yardage book. I did a lot better score-wise having to like figure out things myself.
Cool.
You know, as opposed to like if you have a caddy, at least the caddy we had, he'd be like, all right, here's this hole. We'll hand you the club that you're going to hit sometime, you know, if it's driver or something, tell you where to hit it. And it's like, you do your best to do what the caddy tells you. You get
sure.
to the greens. He's like trying to help you with putts a little bit. And you just like do your best to do what the caddy tells you, as opposed to with no caddy. You know, I just had to make these decisions myself and was more locked in. And
did
so
you feel
did
more?
Better.
Did you feel more in tune with like the golf course
yeah,
itself?
Absolutely,
yeah, 100%. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And so it seems like, I guess if I have caddy again, I'll just be like, just carry my clubs, which that's fine, I guess. Let's see. I started out par eagle, driver 8-iron, hole 3 to 3 feet.
Jeez,
tap in eagle. That was a good. I wrote this down. Par. This is a great podcast. Birdie, par, birdie. Double bogey on 9. Hit it to the right.
Bye-bye, eagle.
Yeah. Hit it to the right in just like, I don't know if you remember 9, but like, wait, you're in sand if you miss fair. Like, wait, horrible shot.
This now 9's that like pretty steep drop off hole.
It goes,
right?
yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
down,
yeah.
That's
a good one.
And then,
yeah.
And so I hit it to the
okay,
right.
Okay, I know where you
and
were.
And I had like 190 left, and I pulled that. You know, it's hard to get the line. Couldn't see the green completely.
Which 190 into that hole is like.
Yeah.
Double what you should
and
have.
And I was way to the left. The shot was way to the left, like in a bush that I couldn't advance out of the bunker. So I just had to hit it again into the bunker, and then I hit on, and then I two-putted 8 for a double bogey. A little deflated. Then we get to 10. Drivable par 4. Or maybe not drivable, but it was. Drove it on the green from 10. That's on up the hill to the left.
Yeah, with the big horseshoe green.
The big horseshoe.
Excellent.
No. That's not that one. Horseshoe like that?
Yeah.
No. This is a different one. It's right before the little snack shop. So it goes like up. The whole hole goes up and to the left. When we played it last year, it was like into the wind. So like everyone in our group laid up down to the right, and you hit up the hill that way.
Oh, got it.
But the wind was different this time, so you could just like go over all that sand.
Oh, no
and, like,
kidding.
Up. Yeah.
Oh, sick.
So two-putted that. That was fun.
Cool.
We were playing with this. There's just like other couple in our group, and they're older, and they are members at like Interlochen Country Club in Minnesota, and they just had PXG clubs, and just all the money anyone you know, could have. And they were like pretty serious about their game. I think they were playing a match. They were boyfriend and girlfriend, but they're like in their 40s. And so okay. They must have met at the club or something. I'm not told, you know, we didn't really talk that much about it. But they're, you know, they're from Minnesota, so they're polite enough and friendly and a little bit talkative, but not that much. They kind of kept to themselves.
Yeah.
But didn't see any, no real, like, emotion one way or another out of either of them throughout the whole, you know, the whole day. We get to hole 14. It's a par 5.
Mm-hmm.
The guy... The interlocking guy, he's to the right of the green. This was their fourth time or fifth time at Sand Valley. He's been every year. Okay. So it's, you know, he know like Mammoth's a course he knows pretty well. He knows he can score at. They have a caddy. Okay, so he's up to the right of the green. And this guy was not. He probably was going to shoot around 80 or something. Right of the green and two. The green, he must not have been paying attention because it has a strong slope and then it goes way down. There's like this huge false front and he's kind of chipping from the side. And so because he didn't realize it, like there's a good chance this ball, if he didn't play it far enough to the right, would have like rolled way down the hill.
Chip it off the green.
Yeah. So he hit the chip and he like hit it where he wanted it to go, but it rolled off the green. And you could see him start to get a little mad. Like, what? Like, how did that happen? Blah, 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 blah. And like his girlfriend was kind of like, there's a big slope. Like, yeah. It was pretty funny.
Did you not notice?
But he was, and then so he was down there, and like Jenny's shot, she was down there as well. And Jenny, you know, obviously, like, she's the most beginner of a golfer of the whole, you know, of the whole group. And sure. So they have the same shot up this kind of false front. She hits, so she's the most inexperienced one. She hits putter, and it rolls up there pretty good to about like 10 feet. Like, nice. Pretty good shot. And this guy, you can just see him thinking about it. You can imagine this type of player when faced with a shot of like, can I do something creative? But he also has a 60 degree wedge in his hand, and right. He just sees this inexperienced golfer hit one up there, and so he's like, maybe that's the play. But you can just see, you know, these types of golfers don't,
his ego's getting in the way.
He's got no creativity. He's
like, oh well, you know, she's doing that because that's all she can do.
Yeah, exactly.
But myself,
he's gonna hit the wedge, and of course, you know, he kind of blades it over green, and he literally like takes his club and like tomahawk slams it into the ground, and the ground there, it like echoes, you know, this thing like
is
like a super loud echo that goes like through the trees. I like never heard a sound like it was just the wildest thing I've ever seen before.
This guy that's keeping to himself.
It definitely like changed the
echo gloves
It was so, because it's kind of like the ground's really firm and it's like sand, you know, Sand Valley. And so like if you throw a ball down, you can like hear a little bit of a thud. It's not the same sound as, you know, most courses you play at. But apparently if you tomahawk a sand wedge, it really echoes as well, too. So that was... You know, that was something.
How did the round finish after that? Like, you still had what?
Which is quieter.
Six holes?
Yeah.
A little quiet?
Yeah.
A little awkward?
Yeah, a little. it was weird. Yeah. For me, I par, birdied on 18.
Yeah. Good birdie there.
That's hitting good drive, you know,
hitting the driver again.
I
love the back nine at Mammoth. The back nine at Mammoth is, I think, pretty special.
It is good. But then we played Sand Valley. The next
it's
day,
really good.
That's the best. Yeah. Like, that course is way better than...
Yeah.
And Mammoth is apparently way more popular because we were trying to make tee times. And it was like, at Sand Valley, we had like, there's tons of options and we could play by ourselves on Sunday. But Mammoth, like, there's no options to play by ourselves. And it was like pretty...
Interesting.
Pretty crowded. So I don't know
maybe
why.
It's because it's more player friendly.
Could be.
You know?
It's newer.
Yeah.
Newer.
But some of those people that have been there before haven't played that one.
Sand Valley has some like really good holes and you actually have to
it's really good.
Make decisions and stuff. Some of the Mammoth holes you don't really have to make a decision at all.
You can kind of hit it anywhere and I agree. I don't know if I've told you, but I'm going to go up there in September with my dad and I.
Wow.
So I'll get to play Sand Valley for a second time because I haven't played Sand Valley only once like 2.5 years ago. Or 2 years ago, so I'm excited to go get another round on that one because I think that's a really good one.
So,
yeah.
Brought our dog. That was great.
Yeah,
just like walk out on the course at night, throw the ball.
Jason,
she's in heaven. So, well, that's
like a great trip. What else?
Well, can we switch off? Like,
okay, we can switch off.
Yeah, we can switch off.
Okay. Well, should I just go into it then?
Okay. This is your time.
So, my biggest golf highlight from the summer, like I said, I felt like I played quite a bit, but it was more just playing, you know, nine holes here and there with the students. I didn't go on any trips or anything early on in the summer, but I was looking forward to the end of the summer because I had a pretty special trip planned with my family and my and some of my family on my dad's side, so his sister, husband, and my two cousins, and we did the dream trip of Pebble Beach. So it was pretty sweet, and so we flew out there on a Saturday, kind of all day travel day Saturday. And we rented this Airbnb on. So if you've ever been out to Pebble, for any listeners out there, 17-mile drive is like a really, you know, big tourist attraction, mm-hmm. right? You actually have to pay to go on this road, and there's like all these little. I think there's 17 stops at every mile of like different places you can go.
Unless,
and see.
I'm sorry to interrupt. My cousins live out there. Actually, been out there a few times. If you tell them you're going to eat at a restaurant.
Oh, yeah,
17? You don't have to pay
to
go on the thing. So some inside tip for all our
listeners.
This podcast is making you money.
It'll save you $10.
Yeah.
So our Airbnb was right next to like Seal Rock, I think is what it was called. Mm-hmm. It was a mile down the road from there. So it was kind of perched up on this hill and overlooked the ocean. It was like super awesome, and it was right next to Cypress Point, which is that like stupid exclusive country club, Cypress Point. So I'll get to that later, but I snuck on the back nine one evening, like my last night there. I was like, I'm gonna go see the 16th hole at Cypress because it's like super famous, and I was like, I'm gonna do it. So I walked out there, got a couple pictures. It was worth it.
Wow.
It was pretty cool. But Sunday, we did this whole 17-mile thing, went driving, and then we played Pebble in the afternoon, and it was, I'll never forget it. It was incredible. It was some of the most dramatic golf holes I've ever seen. It was just jaw dropping. Like I felt like I couldn't even play golf on the front nine because I was in a daze of just like looking at the golf course, looking at the holes, seeing how the ocean and the land just collide with the mountains and the cliffs, and you're like, oh wow, there's like just this pristine golf course laying right here on this like awesome terrain, and then the back nine is obviously it's not quite as dramatic until you get back around to 17 and 18, and then you kind of go through that whole shock again of like, oh my god, look at this. Oh. And just knowing all the history on that golf course too, and going back to some of the tee boxes where you've seen these historic shots hit from, or like on 17 where like Watson chipped in, and like the cut shot 3-wood that Tiger hit around the Cypress and hit the green in 2 on 18, like I stood there where Tiger hit that shot. It literally looks impossible. Like, I don't know how he did it. Incredible. So, you know, those were really cool. So, but a couple highlights from Pebble. I have a couple notes written down of like things that stood out to me. So if anybody's listening, I'd be interested to be like, hey, like what were your big takeaways or whatnot? I thought holes 4 through 10 were my favorite just because they're on the coast, and 4 you're on the ocean, it's a short par 4 up the hill, which was pretty cool. 5 is this medium length par 3, pretty tricky green, and the wind really starts to become a factor then, and just a beautiful hole. And then from 5 you can start to see 6, which is that famous par 5 that just goes like up the hill, up the cliff, blind second shot, and it is the most intimidating golf hole I think I've ever seen, because you see it from afar and you just see how big and dramatic the cliff is, and then you actually get on the hole and it like actually lives up to that, and it's almost even more intimidating than you might think. And I parred the first hole, which was great. Parred the second, which is a par five. Bogeyed the third.
You don't have to go hole by hole. I'm just mean like that par five, what'd you do?
I hit the best freaking drive of the day on that hole, and then I hit one in the ocean, you know.
Wait, your second shot was in the ocean?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and sick. Then I kind of got up there. Three wood. I was going for it. Yeah, I was in a good spot. Oh. So, yeah, I was kind of like on a little downslope, kind of let it leak over the bush the guy was telling me to go for and whatnot. And, yeah, so then you get, like, get up there, and you're like, oh, you got the best perspective of the golf course from there. And then seven, the shot. So then another highlight was the shot into seven, you know, of being able to judge it from the wind and go downhill.
Oh, yeah, downhill par three. Yeah.
The famous downhill par three. Yep. And my brother birdied that hole.
Oh.
It was cool. He hit just like a smooth little pitching wedge down the hill and made a nice little 8-footer in there, which was sweet. I was in that bunker behind the green where Phil said he made the best bunker shot of his life.
Okay.
I was back there. I did not hit a great bunker shot. And then eight, you know, eight's the famous par four, down where you hit an iron off the tee, where they say, hey, like no more than 200 yards. So I hit like a 5-iron up there and to the edge of the cliff. And then you have about 180 yards down, straight down to a green that's no bigger than this room, it feels like.
Okay, that's the hole that Spieth, your boy Spieth, got mad at his caddy
because
he hit it into the – he hit it too far off the tee. Mm-hmm. And then he hit it over the green on his next shot. And he's like, that's two in a row, Michael.
Yeah, that was tough. You know, it's like, also, I like to think of that hole as Jack Nicklaus's favorite par four in the entire world. So
I think of it as a hole where we see Spieth's true colors start to come out.
Hook him.
No, sorry about that.
That was, I felt like that's where my round started to turn around again. I put some quality golf shots together there, made a nice par on eight. And then 9 and 10 stood out to me because you feel like you're on the beach with all the locals down there. And you can see the beach line for, like, I don't know how many miles it is, but it seems like forever. And a nice mountain kind of framing up in the background there. And then you start working your way back up the property and back up the hill a little bit. And trees start to come into play just a little bit more. But some really, really quality golf holes. Some short little fun par fours. And then it... Really, I think 16, 17, 18 are just an awesome stretch of golf holes coming in. 17 is just a freaking beast of a par three. And then 18 is...
Yeah, what did you do on 18?
It's historic.
Draw out the tree?
Yes. I hit that was actually my best drive of the day, not the one on six. I think they were kind of tied. But yeah, high draw at the Cypress. I got past the Cypress a little bit. Mm. And then I hit 3-wood up there pretty good. I had a wedge in. I caught a little skinny and I 3-putted. But,
for bogey.
I had 8 pars and a bogey on the back. So
solid.
It was a good back nine. Yeah, wow. Good. Some short par fours, so it wasn't too hard.
Oh,
yeah. So that was Pebble, and enjoyed a cocktail after the round and some good dinner and enjoyed it with my dad and my brother, which, you know, a trip like that or a round like that, I wouldn't want to go with anybody else.
Yeah, why did you go? Did you just go for fun? Like, you guys wanted to go?
No, so it was a little family reunion to actually pay tribute to my grandparents that had passed away. So my grandmother passed away a little over a year ago, and my granddad passed away, I guess it was six years ago. He was a senior. I was a senior in high school. So a little while ago, they used to live out there in Carmel. Mm-hmm. And so that was like their favorite place to go. My granddad loved golf. He worked out there for Xerox for like, I think almost over 30 years or something like that. And, you know, they made their whole lives out there, and then they ended up moving down to Texas and kind of spending the rest of their time down there. And so, so we went out there and we actually spread their ashes out there and kind of gave them a nice little send off. So it was really special, like, to do
on the golf course.
I cannot confirm nor deny that we did that with my granddad, but we did spread some of my ashes at a park for my grandmother, and then we had, you know, some leftovers, and we did like a little. There's these cool things you can do for like a burial at sea, and they kind of like float and they dissolve as they like float out. And so we did that at this like little bay harbor thing that's like by hole number six. And so so we went out there and did that. It was pretty special.
How did you see like that like podcast episode? Remember that heavyweight podcast where like.
Yes,
like
yes.
On the course.
Yeah, dude. It was very emotional that evening. Like, not gonna lie, but it was like. There was a lot of good closure to that trip, to like know that my grandparents are like in a place that that they loved a lot, and that it was a really special time for our whole family to connect, especially, you know, during all this crazy stuff that's been going on, and a trip that we'd been looking forward to for a long time. So, yeah.
It's good. Wow. Sweet. It's
good. Yeah. And then we played Spyglass the next day, which was just like a whole nother roller coaster. It was just like super awesome. Super awesome. So, yeah, I'd say holes 1 through 5 through Spyglass are awesome. Then the whole back nine is completely different. You feel like you're stuck in the woods, and then you kind of come back out towards the ocean again at the end. And it was great. It's great. So, yeah, if you ever get the chance to go out to Pebble, do it. It's expensive. It's worth every penny. The memories you'll have.
Wow.
Last a lifetime, for sure.
Love to go.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Okay, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you ever put on Poana greens?
I mean, I've put it on the putting green at Pebble Beach before.
Oh, okay.
But
I'd never put on done. Those that kind of grass
yeah.
before. It's so
different.
So
now you know what they talk about on TV when they're like, it's so bouncy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true. It's true. So we played in the afternoon, and like the grass is a little longer, right? It's kind of grown throughout the day, so it's a little more bouncy, but they're still pretty true,
yeah.
I'd say. And then when we played Spy the next day, we played in the morning, mm-hmm. so it's a pretty fresh cut.
Yeah.
It was so much smoother.
Hmm.
So I thought that was kind of
Were you able to like adjust, or was it such a big deal, you know, the way they talk
no,
about it?
It's fine.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. What I mean.
I mean, I felt like a couple wobbled offline here and there, but, you know.
Oh, but still, it's like whatever. It's like the thing no, they always talk
gonna,
about yeah. when they go to that course.
I wasn't
like, he's going to have some trouble. Yeah. Like, he really likes putting on the Bermuda bent grass, and now he's going to have some trouble on the. I'm
yeah.
Like, all right. Like,
for
just,
every
just
putt,
hit a putt, man.
Yeah, for every
like,
putt
relax.
That I thought I messed up. I made one that I maybe didn't expect to make.
Wow.
So it was kind of like...
A little bit like
okay.
Plinko. Like
yeah.
sometimes
you
it
know,
goes in, like, sometimes it bounces left,
exactly.
sometimes it bounces right.
Put a good
right.
stroke on it, move on, you know.
Yeah.
Don't think too much about it.
I guess so. Love it.
Yeah.
Cool. What else? Anything else?
I have a quick little caddy story.
Oh, yeah.
So we had caddies both days. Our first caddy, he was awesome. He looked like a... He looked like a mountain goat guy from like the neck up, you know, like a big beard, ski cap kind of on, beanie. You mm-hmm. know, he looked like a surfer, mountaineer kind of dude, like super chill, sunglasses on, you know. And then from the, you know, then he was just like looked like a track runner from the neck down, you know. He's like, he's a caddy,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
so he's in good shape. Super cool guy, had a cool story. And then our guy at Spyglass was an older gentleman. You know, he'd been doing it for years and, you know, real talkative, but, you know, not so talkative to where it was like annoying or anything.
Yeah.
But so after we finished the round, then we go in, we're giving our pull carts back and the caddy master, or whoever was out there kind of like sanitizing everything. Hey, how was the round? Did you take a caddy? How was he? You know, we said, oh yeah, we had so-and-so and, he said, oh, well, did he talk your ear off? We're like, oh, he's very talkative. He was very kind, very helpful. We had a great time out there. He goes, yeah, that guy can talk a dog off a meat truck.
Wow.
I was like, that was a pretty good one-liner. But, you know, to your point, it's like sometimes you can just get off to the wrong step with a caddy or your personalities might not jive as well as you hope, but it is what it is.
It depends what you're looking for.
It depends.
But it seems like you just had one caddy for your whole group.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
yeah,
maybe
four
a little
caddy.
Better.
I think. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So,
oh, cool. Let's see. I got a whole list here.
What about Lasonia when we went up with Carl and?
We did play. Yeah, that doesn't count though, because that was in May. That
oh,
was
it was
not
in
summer.
May?
This
okay.
is this podcast is titled "Summer of Golf," so
okay.
like we can't talk about
count. June and past.
Yeah, we have to pretend that doesn't exist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. Hmm. Wow. Speaking of emotional rounds, my next round on my list is I went to Minnesota to help my dad move. And we mm-hmm. played this course called Troy Burn.
Troy Burn?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's technically in Wisconsin. It's kind of like the Glen Club. Okay, so it's nice. Like
okay.
A,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That type of
little upscale public kind of.
Yep. Okay. Exactly. It's like one of the 100 best, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
I don't 100 know,
best public
yeah.
tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Here.
Yeah. You got best places you can play. Like those are types of lists that this. Places on and we get there like 9 a.m and first of all like my dad like hates playing with other people
Really?
So, yeah, he just, like, hate, like, really. Like, he's really, like, a nice person and likes, like, helping people, but he just, like, hates playing golf with other people. And yeah. So, you know, I don't know why. Like, whenever with somebody, he just, like, never talks to them. So it's, like, mm-hmm. playing on a Sunday morning. Golf is, like, really busy during this time, yeah, you know, this time of year.
Prime
like,
time.
And because of the coronavirus, like, everyone's playing golf course are full. Sure. You get there, like, 9 a.m., they, like, don't have our tee time in the thing.
Oh,
for whatever
bummer.
Reason. It's, like, not going to be able to go because the course is full. For whatever reason, the starter's like, hey, we're a little bit ahead of pace. You guys can, like, go out right now. We got to go out and play by ourselves.
Nice.
And it, we didn't have to, like, wait on anyone. Like, it was perfect. Like, the best. Yeah, it was, like, I don't know, like, really crazy that a course actually let us do that.
Yeah, and so, especially on a Sunday morning.
I know.
Yeah.
Sunday morning.
Had you played at that golf course before?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was my dad's favorite course.
Oh, nice.
So that was good. Yeah. A week later, my dad died. So that was our, like, surprisingly. And so that was our, like, his last round of golf and, like, our last round of golf.
Your last round together?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. That's
yeah.
beautiful.
Yeah, I know.
It's beautiful how that works out.
Well, yeah, other than him dying. That was not.
Yeah, no, yeah, of course. Our condolences.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, yeah, I don't know. That just kind of, like, shaped the rest of my summer of golf. Since, that, cause, like,
yeah.
my dad and I, we should always play golf together. That's
For
what.
Sure.
Or with my brother, too, whenever. I don't know. Maybe it seems like your family's like that too. Of like, whenever there's something to do, like you just play golf. Like we don't. It's not like we like sit and talk really. We just go play
yeah,
golf
for sure. It's like you know. I think that's a big thing, and I kind of said it on my Instagram post. I think it's like you know we go on this trip, and it was great to reunite and whatnot. And golf is something that brings my family really close together. At least the guys in the family. And then after the round, it's like, all right, hey, let's talk about our round real quick. But now let's talk about everybody else's day and share this time together. And so, I think golf can bring people together for special reasons like that. And you can make a lot of memories out there for sure. Cause you're spending a lot of time with
a lot
people
of times,
out
like
there,
4 or 5
you know?
Hours mm-hmm. with, you know, doing one thing, you know, like you never right. really, and usually like you're not really on your phone that much.
Yeah.
So like, there's not really that many things, you know, that many things like it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, he lived in Minnesota, so we didn't like play that much, but it still is like when you're playing, like you just have memories and like things come up and
yeah stories been, you start telling and
yeah.
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird how, you know, memory works and how different.
Yeah,
yeah I don't know. It's not even one of those things like of like, oh, I wish we had. I mean, like, obviously you do wish you had more time together, but it's not like, oh, I would have done all these things differently. It's like...
It's not, but you would have done what you always would have done, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, let's go tee it up or hang out, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was he.
And I think that's what, looking back at it, makes those moments even more special now because you're like, oh, remember when we got that opportunity to do this
yeah.
or when we went on this trip or like in your instance of like, hey, remember when we got snuck out, you know, and the starter yeah. was like, hey, like, go.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that was so cool.
Yeah.
And it makes that a little more meaningful, especially when either you're not around those people. Like, in my case, like, you know, I live all the way up here. And so I don't get to play with my dad and my brother very often, you know, just a couple times a year. Or, like, mm-hmm. you know, obviously in the instance where, you know, if somebody, a family member passes away, and it's like, wow, that was like our last round of golf. But
yeah.
it's really cool how that works out, you know, that mm-hmm. it's like, I'm glad we got our last round of golf in because.
Yeah.
Who knows? We could have been shunned away by the starter.
I know. Yeah. And as, yeah, last week was tough because we were supposed to be in Scotland and he was supposed to come too.
Yeah,
like,
know,
that was
dude.
Our.
I know.
I mean, we knew for a while we probably wouldn't be able to go, but still, it's like.
Right.
You're just like, man, what if. Mm-hmm. Like, what if instead of being here right now, like, we were at Prestwick or wherever?
I know.
Like,
I know. Oh, God. Dude, that was a tough. Oh, oops.
This guy's falling.
Stop falling.
All right.
That was a tough text to read when he sent that out of, boys, our flight got canceled. I was like, oh, that was a tough one.
Yeah, we were, I mean, who knows if people even know. We were supposed to be in Scotland for 10 days,
mm-hmm.
middle of August, but we weren't able to go. So that's why we're here
recording a podcast about other rounds.
It's really, really, yeah, this podcast would have been a lot better if, you know, coronavirus didn't, I guess. Sorry, coronavirus has taken its toll on a lot of things. It's if it ruined golf for a couple people,
it's not really that big of a deal.
It's fine. We don't need to complain.
Yeah, we don't need a pity party thrown for us.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, cool. Let me think. Do I have anything else on my list? Did you learn any lessons this summer? Did you like what was like the state of your game, or the way you thought about golf or approached it? How did that change throughout the summer?
That's a really good question. I think my mind first goes to, you know, I'd written out some notes of things that I'd wanted to do with my game, and a lot of those were motivated with the Illinois Open last year and playing in my first competitive round in a while, and you know, quite frankly, just getting my ass handed to me and playing, and just I learned a ton from that experience, and so I wanted to put myself in that situation more and grow from it and get more competitive. Make some equipment changes, make a lot of swing changes in the off season and play. And I thought I had a really nice off season from a productivity standpoint. And so I was excited to do that. Obviously, with a lot of tournaments being canceled and then I thought work was really, really busy this summer, almost maybe more busy than we had expected it to be. I kind of set all those goals to the side and I focused more on just like, I think just enjoying the game from a more casual standpoint of how can I still get better but have more fun. And I played two rounds over the last 4 or 5 months with my full set. I mean, everything else has been the half set. It's so much better. And again, I think we need to do like a full legit podcast about
I'll have to get half the set. Godfather of golf here.
Yeah, he's for sure. For sure. And I think, you know, like I threw a random putter. I played yesterday with Chris and Pete and Chris's neighbor, which was a blast. And I threw a random putter in the bag, and it was just like, why wouldn't I throw a random putter in the bag? Just switch it up, change it up, you know? I found those Callaway Bobby Jones irons the other day. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put those in the bag. Well, I'm going to.
Oh.
Yeah, next time I play, you know? Why not?
Yeah.
So... I feel like I have a better relationship with the game after the summer just because of all the kind of crazy stuff I had the kids do on the golf course of like 3-club challenge, 1-club challenge, playing from here, making my own tee boxes on the golf course and just changing up, putting yourself in tough situations and seeing if you have the mental fortitude to get out of that, you know, yeah. And just making it crafty and creative and fun. I think that was my big like learning experience of, being more creative, more fun, more unconventional in order to get better. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I read this, this beginning of this chapter, or that there's this book called Extraordinary Golf by Fred Shoemaker. Mm-hmm. It's just a guy, you know, a guy Pete likes, told me about. I read this to my high school boot camp class, the Evanston one, you know, the better high school boot camp. Class.
Oh, you gonna throw some shade over here?
No, I don't know. Okay, and what you were just saying kind of like similar to what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So ready? You ready? I'll just read. It's only a page.
Yeah, go for it.
He says, this is just in the intro to the book, so...
Oh.
Actually, the book, I think, kind of goes downhill after this, but it's okay. That's so, okay, just whatever. All right, I don't want to preface that in the wrong way. Okay, this is what he says. He says... He says, the game I had been playing was mostly concerned with the game I thought I should play. Getting the respect of my peers, living up to the expectations of my friends and family, having the quote-unquote right swing. I knew what all that was about, and I didn't want it anymore. For the first time, I started to think about the type of game that I myself would like to play, the one that would give me the most joy and satisfaction, that would enrich my life the most. I knew that it would not be bound by formulas, as my previous game had been. Looking back on my golf history, I saw that as the formulas came in, the joy went out. It became apparent to me that the element that was missing from my game, the ingredient that had made my early golfing years so magical, was freedom. I knew then that the game worth playing would be one in which I was free. Now the word free is used so often and in so many ways that it can be difficult to figure out exactly what it means, but my experience over the years has helped me. I have given more than 30,000 individual golf lessons, conducted hundreds of seminars for amateurs and professionals in several countries, led the Golf in the Kingdom workshop at the Azalean Institute for the past 8 years, and run my own school for extraordinary golf for the past 4. In this time, I've learned some things about the meaning of freedom in golf. Here's the key paragraph. It means freedom in golf. Freedom in golf means that when you step up to a shot, if you think of formulas, checklists, or swing keys, you're not free. If you think that that looking good and not being embarrassed are the most important, you're not free. If your actions are shaped by fear or even hope, you're not free. Freedom is stepping up to a shot as if you were the very first golfer, unburdened by past history, with a future full of possibilities. Freedom is thinking, what shot would I hit if it were just up to me? Which it is. A person who can play this way is, in my opinion, the only person who's playing real golf.
It's pretty good, man. It's pretty good.
You like that one?
That's great. I have a little story to go off of that. I was in a lesson with a student. I was trying out for Lake Forest. Good player. He's had a great summer. And, you know, a lot of people come to you for in a lesson that, you know, they come for these cues or they come from these tips, right? They come for the answer, right?
Yeah.
And it's our job as coaches to be able to give them that, but in a way that they can be organized with it, hopefully, and that they can implement it. And I think our coaching style has to change in the season because, right, you're not going to make all these hopefully you're not making all these technical changes in, you know, mid-season, right? You could do that in the off-season. So anyways, long story short, we had a great lesson. We get to the driver, you know, like last 10, 15 minutes, and he's hitting some drivers. And he's hitting it pretty good, but like not as great as he was hitting his other ones. And, you know, I could tell he's getting a little tired. I could tell he starts to overthink it a little bit. And, you know, he's getting a little frustrated. And I pulled him aside. I said, hey, like, grab some water, take a break. And I said, you've done a really great job up to this in the lesson, but I think you're forgetting one thing. And I told him, you're forgetting to just swing and do what you know how to do and just swing the golf club. Don't overthink it. Your cues are in the right spot. Your swing's in a good spot. Trust it. Move forward and just swing the golf club. Then he piped like five in a row. You know, he just needed like he almost needed the permission to like have that freedom again.
Yeah.
And, it's like, you know, sometimes you just need to be reminded of that and that it's okay to have all these formulas and cues and strategies and all of that stuff, but let's be organized with it and let's remember why we're still here of like, well, hopefully you still enjoy it and that you just know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, because it's up to you. You know, like, I love that at the end. Like, it's, what would you do if it were up to you? You know, you're the one in control. Nobody else has to control what you're doing or what you're feeling or what your decision is.
Yeah, I think especially with high school kids who are like getting ready for tryouts, they had this talk with like so many different kids. They just like forget that golf is fun because you're like so, they're so scared about playing because they think like, and even if it's just a practice, even if we're just practicing and playing on the course, they're like, man, they end up thinking, if I hit a bad shot here, then that means that I'm going to hit a bad shot in tryouts, and then that means that I'm going to have a bad score in tryouts, and then that means that all my friends and my parents are going to think I'm a bad golfer, and then that means that if they think I'm a bad golfer, that must mean that I'm like kind of a bad person or something, that the score of a double or triple or quadruple bogey like reflects who I am, and that's really a lot going through your head as you're standing over a ball.
It snowballs, man.
Yeah.
It snowballs.
Yeah, it's crazy, but it happens to so many different people.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like what he says of like freedom is stepping up to a shot as if you're the very first golfer. So that's kind of been my thought of like, you just imagine you're out there by the ocean just hitting a ball just for fun, like because it's there and because it exists. And as opposed to like, I feel like this summer, in the middle of summer, I got caught up with like, I'm playing to shoot under par or I'm playing to hit, you know, like success to me would be hitting all my drives in the fairway or something. And you just like get so, I was like, okay, as soon as you start missing with drives, like then what happens? Like you're like, for me, for example, I would always, you know, driver's always the hardest club for me to hit consistently, but I'd usually first hole or two, it's like pretty good. Like hit good drives down the middle, but then let's say hole three or four, like I miss one either right or left, doesn't really matter. Then from that point, I'm just like constantly trying to like fix that. And like, you get so like, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, now on this next hole, my memory for whatever reason isn't of the two good drives that I hit without really thinking on the first two holes. It's about the third hole where I hit one bad. And so now I'm thinking about like, I have to do this and this and this and the swing. And you're just lost from that point. And so it's just like really hard to not have all that stuff come up, but it comes up. And so Yeah, I just thinking of like if it was all up to you and it wasn't about like your coach or, you know, your friends or your parents, like what would you, you know, like how would you play? Like, what do you play? I think that's just like
fun things to think about. You're the first man on the moon. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, like you're the, you're the only person.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really cool. That's a great mindset to have. You know, if you can get there,
And I like how he ends. He's like the person who's playing this way. That's the only person who's playing like real golf.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow, I don't know. It's not like he, like this guy plays competitively and has played, you know, played tons of tournaments and stuff, but he's like, he still is like trying to say these things and that like they go together, that somehow being free can kind of lead to lower scores, which is a really hard thing to trust, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Cause you're like, man, I have to have all of the answers or all of the, you know, the swing keys or all the different things. And, that stuff. Yeah. In my own coaching, I've like tried to start saying like a lot less recently because like someone hits a bad shot. Maybe it's just, they hit a bad shot. Maybe there was something technically wrong with it, but maybe it's like, maybe they just need a little bit of like space to feel it or to figure it out. And so it's like, you can see giving golf lessons, how people can get in the trap of like, all right, let's just say like with your example with who you're talking about, Will.
Will, yeah.
Yeah. What was he doing? Hooking it?
Mm-hmm.
So he's hitting like, it's like three hooks in a row. Like you, as obviously a trained golf coach, know technically what would cause or what could cause a hook. So let's say it's club path.
Right.
So now you set up a little barrier or something, and now this is going to help his club path. And now he goes up and there's a barrier there behind him. He's swinging over this noodle and he hooks it again. So now what are you going to do? Are you going to tell, you're like, okay, well now it could be a club face. All right. Now you got to control your club face. Okay. So now you explain this thing to him about what he's got to feel through the shot about club face, and he still got the barrier there, but now he hooks it again and then he hooks it again. And it's like, okay, now are you going to try to tell him something else? Because now you've already cluttered his head with like five different things.
And once you say it, it's out there.
Yeah.
So like you can't say, and I made the mistake of doing that the other day. And I said, you know what? Forget what I said. And it's like, well, they can't because I already said it and they already took two swings thinking about it, you know, but, and then I got to really get them bought into what I said after that or the other thing that I wanted to focus on. But yeah, you're 100% right. It's like, sometimes they just need time but as a coach, you can always get caught up in saying, well, we don't have much time cause I only have an hour. So I want to give them the answer.
You know? Cause you like, want to feel like you're actually, giving them,
you want to give them value, you know?
Yeah. And like ego gets in the way of like, I want to prove my worth and my knowledge as like an authority figure, but it actually doesn't help people get that much better.
Absolutely not.
I mean, think about, you were talking about the work you did this off season. Like, I feel like sometimes we would talk about things, but most of the time you or me getting better is just like us doing, like figuring things out by ourselves.
Figure it out.
And so figure helping. I mean, there's ways that coaches can help you do that, but it still is like, it's done by you feeling those things and figuring out yourself.
Right.
Like, because you want to, because you're interested in. And that's where.
And like, you know, I'd ask you for help and you would do it, you know, to me, like, hey, come look at this real quick. It's like when I was ready for that, you know. Otherwise, I'll do it on my, you know, I'll do it on my own because I know that I can do, you know, I can do it and I have the resources too.
So, so what we're saying is, everyone who signs up for lessons with us should stop.
No, we're happy to help you.
No. It's more that a good coach can greatly expedite the process of you figuring it out and can like facilitate your learning as opposed to cluttering your head with information.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
I don't know. That's what I said. Like getting back. Oh, reminds me of Mark G, right? Yeah. Sorry,
frankly,
Mark.
I know
you're one of like our five listeners, so thank you, but I'm sorry. Mark is someone we know through Chris. We went out to Cog Hill, and Mark was there. And, he always asked me about Genkis. So he's just like, he's like, how's it going? Like, blah, blah, blah. Should I, he's like, should I do it? He's always like, should I do the like Gangsta Sight or Change My Swing. Sure, he's like, he's like, I want to hit a draw, and it's like, he's got all these things.
Should
like,
I get shouted out, Scooby?
Yeah. That's basically he's like, should I do it? And I think my response, like, hey, like you can, but it's really like a lot that's gonna like go into your head, and that might not make you play better for maybe a long time. And so, if you're okay with that, then go for it. But, but yeah, it's just not. I don't know, I just feel like we always think that more information is automatically going to make you better or make you enjoy golf more, and I don't think that's
more money, more problems.
I guess so. All right. Well, you got anything else you want to say?
I'm really looking forward to the fall. I think the way that that program is going to be structured is going to be a nice balance of playing on the course, starting to work on some of those skills. And hopefully our students can see some good success in their high school seasons. I'm excited to see that and get a couple good rounds in, you know, before the snow starts falling.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. I feel like we have quite a few people that got bumped up this year from JV up to varsity. So that's exciting. I thought pretty good list of high school tryouts and a lot of good success stories. Some really good ones, which is always encouraging, and it'll be a fun season to watch. So looking forward to that. I think that's it. It's good to sit down and have the microphone.
It's great.
Microphone in hand.
Just for all our people who can't see you right now, how many ounces of water fit in that water bottle that you have?
64.
Oh, 64.
And I drink about 3 of these a day.
I was going to guess 128.
No. They actually have one on Amazon. You can buy it. It's 128, but it was like $100. I was like, no. So
it
the summer
like
was pretty
both
hot.
Of you who have been to the Cube, you know, we have that water cooler and there's a thing that sits on top of it. It looks like he carries that around, but
yeah,
it's not apparently. It's not as much.
I drink a lot of water, man.
But you have to.
You have to. You're outside all day roasting, you know, sweating.
I don't mean to make fun of you for drinking water. I'm just,
it's all good. I know it's a little crazy. All the kids were making fun of me. I probably cycled through about 3 different kinds of water bottles until I figured out which one I wanted, and this one is here to stay.
Wow.
For the time being.
Okay.
Until they make a bigger one. That's not $100.
There'd be so much to carry, but okay. All right, let's wrap up.
Good. Okay, that's, sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds
like all
right, we'll talk to you all next time.
Later.
I'd hit it again, because that shot was a defining moment, and when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes.